Welcome to G.L. Horton Stage Page. Today is Sunday, March 18th, 2007. No big production numbers this week. Running on fumes, I guess. A pair of monologues is the best I can do for you. Good thing they're solid pieces. We also have The Week in Boston, a response to an email request for permissions from GL, and a short commentary by me. So, let's get on with the show and see if I can pull this thing off. The winter season seems to be winding down with several closings this weekend. However, Oliver Twist runs one more week at the ART. Company 1 continues 6 rounds, 6 lessons by an African playwright at the BCA through the end of the month. And the new rep has another small show, White People, in their downstage space. The Huntington Theater continues with a recreation of Obie winner Lisa Kron's Well. Janet Kenney has a world premiere of Teresa at Home this week at the Boston Playwrights, while Speakeasy Stage just opened Neil LaBute's Fat Pig. Next weekend, Lyric lights up again with Christopher Durang's Miss Witherspoon, featuring Paula Plum and a supporting ensemble with Jackie Parker. For reviews by Will Stackman, go to On the Isle at http://profwill.spymac.com. Here's a monologue from the play GL wrote not long after attending her very first science fiction convention. She managed to capture several people beautifully, including the one she named F.E., or Four Eyes. Katie Curley managed to capture this spirit. From the one-act play, Conventional Behavior, link to the script in the cover art.
Oh yeah, I'd say a science fiction convention's a good way to meet people who share your interests. If you mean people who are, like, weird and sort of the same way. And there's a writer's workshop. I've even gone to it. Of course, it doesn't always work. Even though I felt close to some of those writer people at the time, later on in the con, they just walked right by me. Of course, they could be shy. I mean, I've always heard that about writers, haven't you? Shy, but sort of kind. So I figured I'd be comfortable with them, even though I've only written, like, 6 pages of this one story. But I love writers. I mean, I almost worship them from afar. Except here at the con, they're not so far, are they? They're walking around and talking on the panels. They're even dancing. Dancing writers! Doesn't that freak you out? Last night, I actually danced with Larry Niven. You'd never imagine that Larry Niven would be dancing, would you? Especially not an old-fashioned. I mean, maybe a foxtrot. Like, probably that's what he did in high school, but maybe you'd figured he'd do that. But a contra dance? At the Titanic Ball? I was dancing with this woman dressed as a pirate, doing the Congress of Vienna, and we went down the set and changed partners, and there I was, holding hands with Larry Niven. Whoa! Can you imagine the thrill? No, I see you can't. You're such a newbie. You've probably never even heard of Larry Niven, have you? Yeah, sure, a writer. Terrific deduction. You could even guess science fiction writer without consulting Google. Brett, what have you read that he's written? Fans don't say fans. Here, we're Fen. The plural fans is Fen. And it's not sci-fi, you ignorant jerk. Only mundanes call it sci-fi. I bet you just came here to get laid. Never mind, it doesn't matter. Listen, I'm sorry if I hurt your feelings. I know what that's like. It's not a crime to be a newbie. That's why I got so upset about the workshop, where I was a newbie and those writers let that guy treat me like adult. My name's Effie. Well, it's not a name, it's initials. Not Effie, but F period, E period. Stands for Four Eyes. That's what the kids called me in junior high, because I wear glasses and I read all the time. It started as an insult, but by now I don't mind. I'm used to Effie. I guess it suits me. After all, having four eyes ought to be an advantage, shouldn't it? See more, know more. And I not only read, I want to write. Science fiction writer, that's my dream. But getting started is so hard. The workshop's here at the con. You should go. They could help you. But I can't go back. At least not this year. The problem was, well, I critiqued this guy's story. I mean, it was really well done, I could tell that. Although I didn't know anything about the particular setting, where it took place in the military. This is after a kind of alternative World War II, where the Japanese had won and these American airmen were hiding out in an island and, like, turning into cannibals, which I guess is thematically profound, at least to some people. I told the writer I thought it was brilliant, but didn't he feel funny putting himself inside the mind of a guy who would eat people? And he really took that personally, like I'd insulted him. You know what he said to me, right in front of the whole group? I was so embarrassed. He said, "Don't worry, honey, nobody..." Oh shit, why am I telling you this?
I'm digging some correspondence out of my email box. Here's one. Dear G.L. Horton, my friend and I would like to use a scene from your one-act play, Regency Romance, as our duet acting piece. We would like your permission to perform it in our drama class. If it has been performed on stage, would you mind letting us know? If it has, we would be able to take it to a competition, again with your permission. It would benefit to know your answers as soon as possible so we can start preparing for the competition. Thank you very much. But this email was signed with somebody's AOL handle, so I had to write back and say, I'd be delighted to have you compete with it. I'll send you official permission after you supply your names or your coach's name and the school. Because to write out an official release contract, I have to have the name of a person to give my permission to. Now, I don't mind writing back and asking you to send names of schools, but if you're in a hurry, it would really speed the process if you sent them in the first place. Regency Romance is a script that's had dozens of productions since it first appeared at the Playwrights Platform Festival in Boston. It won Critics' Choice at the Samuel French Off-Off-Broadway Festival in 1981 and was done in the University of Limerick in 2003, and it just had another performance at a high school here in the U.S. You'll find a contact button for me on my stagepage.info website, or you can email me directly at g.l.horton, H-O-R-T-O-N, at mindspring.com.
Annabelle Gretz was here a while back and left us with a minute mouth off about the people who run Big Oil. GL doesn't actually know any such people, but she's heard it from folks who say they do. The link to the script should be with the cover art.
I know somebody high up in Big Oil pretty well. Well enough to get his perspective. According to my friend, Bush II is the greatest American president in history. Everything W promised his supporters in the oil business, he has delivered 100%. Those guys are driving around in $150,000 cars, sailing million-dollar yachts, and bouncing between multi-million-dollar homes and fancy hotels. The tax cuts really worked for them. They love W. On a personal level, he's a nice enough man, but his view of the public is like theirs. He's a fellow aristocrat. These people think of themselves as natural rulers. Everybody else is the help. Wealth belongs to aristocrats out of divine right, or social Darwinism. Sometimes they claim they deserve the money because, thanks to them, it trickles down. But they do their best to slow that trickle to the merest drop. You see, they believe that the economy is a function of their wise manipulations. To them, money isn't just the best measure of personal worth. It's the only measure. They have nothing but contempt for anyone who isn't rich, really. These are the people who are running America, and I'm sorry to have to report that they are as cold and ruthless as you always expected they were. Bush and his buddies may call themselves Christian, but when it comes to loving their neighbors, well, let's just say that they can sleep well in a world where their aristocratic 1% owns 90% of everything. The rest of us poor peasants are lucky if they allow us to work for them at whatever wage they condescend to pay.
Last month's show, In the Dark, should have 31 days of people listening to it. It's a decent show. Instead, it has 11. Nothing at all between the 5th and the 14th of March. The previous three shows were not quite as good, and they have not been heard at all since the 5th of March. The last show people are still listening to was Interview with the Playwright. The worst heard show before that was the one memorializing our cat. That was only listened to about 24 days past month, 39 times. Shows from last August were downloaded by over 100 people each this past month. 3 months of shows later with better audio quality, better scripts, better editing, better fill, maybe half as many listeners. Could someone explain it to me? Write me at davidmeyer@mac.com. That's davidmeyer@mac.com. I'd like to hear your opinions. That's it for one more week. I'll try to get more out of GL before she heads for New York City to wrap it up for the ICWP celebration next weekend. If not, could you manage to listen to me reading more monologues? Maybe I'd better make sure to get some more content. Until next week!